Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Teja. Today, I'm joined by Mark Powell to talk about his new book, The Fifth Phase, an insight-driven approach to business transformation. Mark is a partner at Ernst & Young, a world-leading consultancy firm. He specializes in the application of data and analytics to drive business transformation. He is the author of three other business books and is based in the UK. In his new book, Mark analyzes the new fifth phase of business transformation, which will build the refineries that turn data into useful products. Thank you very much, Mark, for joining me today on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm very excited to speak with you about your new book, The Fifth Phase. And my very first question is, why did you decide to write it?
I suppose because out of frustration, to be honest. I mean, I spent most of my career as a strategy and transformation consultant. And a few years ago, I started getting very actively involved in looking at how to leverage data analytics and AI to drive transformation. And I got really frustrated with the fact that most organizations were actually struggling to do anything with it relative to what I saw as the potential. So I felt there was a need and opportunity to kind of write, how do we need to reimagine the whole concept of driving transformation from analytics and AI, in the hope that, you know, I kind of see myself as on a bit of a mission to kind of get people to think differently around how to utilize data analytics to drive business transformation.
Absolutely. And in the book, you discuss all five transformations that the businesses have been through. So let's discuss all of them one by one so we can better understand what that fifth phase is going to be. So the first one that you mentioned in the book, the first phase, is a scientific revolution. So what was that about?
So if you go back, and this goes back effectively not just the scientific, this is the birth of management consulting as well as business transformation. And if you go back sort of early stages in the Industrial Revolution, a very, very interesting chap called Frederick Taylor developed the concept of time in motion. And he would literally go into factories with a stopwatch and time processes and work out how you could minimize the time taken to, you know, put a nut onto a bolt or cut something out of metal, whatever it was. And so by studying time and motion, he was able to optimize factories, basically. And that was the very first concept in this idea that people could go into businesses and help them massively increase the efficiency by applying kind of scientific principles, in his case, time and motion, and applying kind of mathematics to how people work in factories. And that was the origin, as I say, not only of modern business transformation, it was the origin of management consulting itself.
Yeah, definitely. And then the second phase is actually Taylorism with computers. So how is that different from the first phase?
Not as different as some people would like to think. It just took it to another level. So what you're talking about here effectively now is the evolution of kind of enterprise resource management and the application of computer technology from coming out of DEC and IBM from the kind of 60s onwards, where computing power then became the next concept, because time and motion and Taylorism was effectively still based on paper and pens and calculators and basic mathematics and process management. But when people were able to start putting real-time computing into it, you could take that to a whole different level. But at its heart, it was still based on the same principle around optimizing processes and being efficient in the way you move from one process to another and doing it the most efficient way. Except in that case, you could use computers and resource management technology coming out of IBM and DEC in particular to actually take it beyond the level that scientific, you know, the scientific revolution and Taylorism could take you to. We're now in the art of applying technology, not just intellectual capability, but actual physical computing to the same process.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then the third phase that you discuss in the book is process management. So what was that about?
So then you kind of step forward into going into, I suppose at this point, kind of into the 80s and beyond. And the concept of kind of lean management, waste reduction, you know, Six Sigma, the Toyota way, all of those things were then around looking at the process optimization from a slightly different angle, not just from the point of view of of optimizing process itself, but of actually particularly focusing on taking waste out of the system itself. I mean, obviously, I think Toyota is still probably for me the most famous example, having worked with them in those years, around effectively just going to zero waste and going to things like just-in-time production, taking all waste out of the supply chain, all waste out of the process. So again, it was going beyond computers. It was also involving people much more actively in the process. But at its heart, it was still based on the same way of thinking, which is getting down to the ultimate zero time, zero waste, the most efficient process you could come up with, now applying time and motion plus computers and plus now kind of lean Six Sigma process thinking, working with people as well, which is great. But fundamentally at its heart, it's still based on more or less the same principle around being efficient and doing things the most efficient way, but very, very effective without a shadow of a doubt.
And then we move on to the fourth phase, which you call drowning in data leaks. So what is that? And are we still in this phase?
By and large, I would argue yes. So I think certainly again, moving on from kind of lean and Six Sigma, and then everybody got very, very focused on the fact that actually, again, computer technology had improved significantly. We were also collecting more and more data. There was more and more data floating around. And so the obsession became, okay, data's it. Data's the next concept. We need to get all our data together and then do stuff with it, and that'll be great. And that's sort of fine up to a point. And so people spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars basically trying to manage these big data programs to bring all the data into one place, building data lakes. So we've got all our data in one place. Terrific. But again, if you look at a lot of the research, whether it's done by Gartner or Forrester and others, would tell you that many, if not most, of these hugely expensive kind of data management, data lake programs ultimately fail to really deliver return on investment. And I think the reason for that is kind of where we went to with the fifth phase is because ultimately they got obsessed with the concept that data itself was inherently valuable. But data is not inherently valuable if you're not really clear what you want to do with it and really clear about which data links to what data to drive better outcomes. So I think data, there's this horrible expression, which I actually hate, but people talk about data is the new oil. No, it's not. Data could be a massive concept in oil if you know what you're doing with it. With oil, we know what we're going to do with oil. We're going to refine it and put it in cars. We're going to refine it and put it in factories. We know exactly what we're going to do with oil. I don't think we've been quite so clear about knowing exactly what we're going to do with data, apart from collect and manage it and look after it. That's probably not going to be enough to actually drive outcomes that I think could be driven.
And why do you think we're so unsure about what to do with data? What's the reason for that?
I think there's kind of a couple of reasons for that. I think number one goes back to who owns what, right? The challenge I think we've got increasingly, as we've moved away from kind of process to data, data is largely owned by the CIO, CTO, the technology IT side of the business. And their job, fundamentally, rightly so historically, is to look after the technology and to provide the tools for the business to do whatever the business wants to do. So their job is to, okay, you want data? We'll help you manage data. You want tools to collect data? We'll give you tools to collect data. You want a strategy around the data? We'll give you a strategy around the data. But fundamentally, they don't own the business side, the outcomes. And they're not close enough, usually in my experience, to what the business is trying to drive. So you get this huge disconnect between this idea of the kind of IT part of the business is there to provide a service to the business, and the business is there to consume the service. But in the worlds of big data, that becomes slightly problematic because on the IT side, they don't really understand well enough what the business needs or wants or tries to do. Their job is just, here's the data, you work it out. And the business side of it has limited or nowhere enough understanding around the kind of what art of the possible, about what could you do with data? So I think you get this huge disconnect between the two. So for me, the evolution in terms of transformation and data is around also the evolution of the role and the thinking around how you actually structure organizations and the relationship between the technology side of the business, which has become much more powerful going on from sort of phase, the fourth phase of transformation. And the third phase into the world where actually, when you get in the world of data analytics, those two are going to have to get much more closely integrated than I think they have become.
Oh, that's a very interesting point about that disconnection between the IT and the business part of an organization, which leads me to, I guess, the biggest question of this podcast, and what's really that fifth phase?
So the fifth phase for me, I mean, I use various terms, but effectively it's this idea that you've got to start from the other direction, right? Data up is around saying, let's get our data together and work out what to do with it. The fifth phase is around starting at the other end, value down, i.e., forget the data for the moment. What you really need to understand is and to think about is what outcomes can I change or drive differently if I could give different insights, and then work out what data I would need to drive the insights to drive the better outcome. It's completely reversing the whole mentality of it. So the fifth phase is around being insight-driven and data-enabled. It's about not being data-driven. I personally hate the term data-driven. I think it's meaningless. I think it's unhelpful. And I think it drives completely the wrong mindset. But when you drive down from value, and I'll give you an example, because I mean, I first kind of started exploring this about 12 years ago. And I was a transformation consultant. I was working in the utilities industry. And quite frankly, we were trying to work out, you know, I had a client who'd done phase one, phase two, phase three, and phase four, right? They'd done it all. And they now had got to the point to go, we don't know where else to go in terms of driving business outcomes, improving our performance, you know, making money. That's what businesses are there fundamentally to do. So what at the time, I had been doing some, I was working for a different company. I was working, and I came across a very interesting group of people who were doing some really great stuff with advanced analytics and machine learning. And they were doing it on pricing modeling, which is kind of fun and interesting, but not terribly exciting. And I thought, hang on a sec, that what they're doing, I could apply that in a different way. And a mate of mine at the time, he was a long-term client of mine, he was the CFO of a utility company. And I sat down and said, look, I don't know where this is going to go, but I have this idea around, what if we reimagined your business as a series of linked optimization problems, i.e. what insights, if you understood the link between outcomes, insights, and I can map that back to data, we might be able to do something really, really interesting. And so we fairly sat down for 2 days with the board of that organization, and we remapped it rather than a series of functions and departments and silos as a series of linked insights and optimization problems that reimagined the whole way they looked at that business. And that led us to kind of starting to think differently around what we could do, not with data, but with insight, and then go back to what data do we need to drive the insight that could drive a different outcome.
That's fascinating. But what's interesting, that's something that just came to my my mind, is because in the previous answer, you mentioned that there is a disconnection between the business and the IT part of an organization. So who would be responsible to start from value down instead of data? Who in an organization should be responsible for that?
Well, that's sort of the million-dollar question, isn't it? That is the key question. My argument would be that increasingly there's two answers to the question. One is, my starting point is the people who own the outcomes are largely usually the CFO and the CEO, CMO, right? The business senior execs. They are the ones who own the share price fundamentally. So I'd argue that part one to the answer to your question is, actually, we need the CEO, the CFO, the COO, the CMOs. We need them to be much more thinking around that insight analytics is about transformation, not about technology. But we also need people to start reimagining the role of the CTO or the CDO. I mean, I'm particularly drawn by this idea of organizations having a chief insights officer, whose job is to understand the link between outcomes and insights and then linking back to the technology. So for me, what we're talking about, I think, is an evolution in leadership and senior management organizations, whereby we need CFOs, CEOs, et cetera, to become much more au fait with thinking about data analytics, AI, as a transformation strategic tool, not just as technology we need to deploy, but equally needing CIOs, CTOs, CDOs, whatever terminology people have this day, companies vary, but we need them to be much more part of the strategy and transformation conversation. So one of the things for me around the fifth phase is going to be about reimagining the people who sit around the boardroom. It's not just around rethinking about data and insight and value. It's around rethinking, how do we configure boards in modern organizations who are geared up to leverage what you could do with current technology and data?
It sounds like we need to learn how to work better with each other in the different departments.
Absolutely. And we need to think differently around what the roles of those departments and what skills and capabilities you need. I've been doing a little bit of research recently around the concept. I'm very interested in this idea around organizations that have a chief insights officer whose job it is to own the concept of what insights we need. If you look at the FTSE 100, I think only one of them actually has a chief insights officer. So I think, if you look at where this is going to go, I personally believe is we're going to start to be thinking much more around having senior people on the board who are the kind of a linchpin between, the exec side of the CFO, CEO side of the world and the kind of CDO, CTO side of the world. Now, that linchpin could be a chief insights officer. It could be an evolution of the role of the CTO or the CDO. It could be an evolution of the role of the CFO or CEO. But at some point at the moment, in most organizations, there is a missing piece, I think, in this puzzle.
Yeah, that's very interesting. All right, and then let's talk a little bit about profitability, because you say in the book that once businesses start from value down instead of data up, data can actually drive profitability. So how can that, how does that happen?
Not in the direct way. So let's. I think we've got to be clear about the differential. There's a lot of problems with terminology, and a lot of people got very confused between data and digital. And if you look at digitization, which has advanced quite a lot, where we see it every day in our ongoing frustrations trying to speak to a human being in a call center. I mean, that's all part of the digital revolution, whether it's self-servicing on banking apps, whether it's self-service on online. I mean, that's all digital. That's all terrific. And most organizations have moved that a long way down. But I think what we're now talking about is the concept of what if I knew things I didn't know, which is a slightly different concept. So if I look at any organization I've ever worked with in my 35 plus career, I would argue that the best organization I've ever worked with and maybe working on a good day of about 70% insight. They know 70% of what they could know or they do know in terms of how they run their business. And a 70% is good. Most organizations, 60, 65 on a good day, right? And when I say what they know, do they have perfect knowledge about their customers, about their supply chain, about the material costs, around, whatever it is, government policy, politics? No organization does. So if you are an organization working on 70, 75%, you are tier one. If you're an organization working 60, 65%, you're probably tier two. The question is, what if I could give the tier one organization on, say, 72% insight, if I could give him another 1 or 2 or 3% insight around his business, his customers, his logistics, his supply chain, I could transform his profitability. Because in a world where actually businesses are generally not crap at running businesses, a few are, but very few are, people have been running businesses, we know how to run businesses. But ultimately, we're running them in a world whereby we are used to optimizing the insight we've got. We're back to the phase 1 to 4. What if I could give you 2 or 3%? What if you knew things that you don't think are currently possible to know that I think you might be able to know if you really got smart around analytics, data, and artificial intelligence? Now we're in the world of thinking around profitability linked to new insights. Most organizations are still, in my view and experience, see profitability linked to two main things. It's linked to profitable growth in terms of I sell more stuff to more people, they like my products, I invest in my products and people buy more of my products, or I take costs out of the delivery process, whether that's staffing levels, whether that's leaning my supply chain, closing unprofitable stores, whatever it is. But none of that generally is about applying new insights, knowing things I don't currently know, because in many cases, people don't believe they could know things they don't currently know. I think they could.
Absolutely. Something else that really caught my attention when I was going through your book was a chapter that was titled, "Not all data are created equal." So what does that mean and why are they not equal?
So there's kind of two parts to this. I think if you go back to where we started around data lakes, and a lot of the processes and the programs put in place to manage data, build data lakes, basically is all about all the data we've got, let's get it all together, make sure it's properly managed and codified and correlated and has owners and all the rest of it. But the reality is the amount of money and time you might spend on that may be disproportionate to the value of the data itself. Now, my experience is that actually not all data is equal. Some data has massive value. So if you are a heavily regulated organization, maintaining quality data that links to proving that you are achieving your requirements under law to regulate your business, think about financial services, aviation, drugs, you know, managing data linked to proving that you are being regulatory, you are performing according to regulatory requirements is very important. Having said that, a lot of value in data sits in linking data together, right? So, and a data set on its own is not necessarily has the same value. I'll give you a pragmatic example. So when I started my own personal journey around this whole area, and I came out of the utility industry, and I was very, very obsessed with the efficacy of water organizations. And the biggest challenge in water, or one of the biggest challenges in water industries, is a lot of the water, about 33%, is leaked underground, right? And you can't see the leaks until the water comes to the top. And I was one of the first things I was exploring was, could I identify and locate a leak without seeing it by applying data analytics? Turns out you can. Because if I can link together, most water companies use pressure and flow data around the network, and they collect data that basically shows, pressure and flow of water. They then basically, you could link that data to asset data to know which pipes might be in that area. Anyway, long story short, if I can link 7 data sets together, I can do that task. And the interesting thing was, when I first did it, was the data set that made it actually possible to do it was a set of data that the organization largely saw as not having value, because it was historical work management data, which is basically records of people digging holes. I've dug a hole, I filled it in, who cares? But when I link that data to historical data on the leaks that the network had had, and I link that to their asset registration data, and I link it to all the pressure and flow data, that data, that one data set, was a key to doing something that has phenomenal value in the industry. So when I say not all data is created equal, it's because some data can enable you to do things more than others. All data has value. The problem with a lot of the historical ways we look at sort of data management is it doesn't spend enough time and effort trying to understand what data can drive value. The other part of this equation is that a lot of organizations are obsessed with the data they've got. They don't spend enough time thinking or understanding or looking for what data that we don't have might enable to do things we can't currently do by linking that data together. So for me, all data has value, but not all data has the same value, because it depends what I'm going to do with it and how I can link it.
Mm. Yeah, that's fascinating. And when we're talking about data, I cannot mention AI and especially ChatGPT, which people have been talking about in the past months. So what role do you think AI will play in business, and would that cause a threat to people's jobs or anything else in business, really?
Okay, that's a question. Yeah, I think there's been huge amounts of hype about ChatGPT. A lot of it unwarranted, in my personal view. There's no question you can't do amazing things, and you know, I can go and write essays for my 13-year-old son on ChatGPT that he would never write. Interestingly, having spoken to someone I'm working with who's actually trying to write anti-ChatGPT algorithms for schools, has proven very quickly it'd be incredibly easy to identify what was written by ChatGPT and what wasn't. So ChatGPT is an amazing application. It shows what AI is capable of, but I think it's been blown out of all proportion in terms of what it can do. I think if you look at the concerns around jobs, so will things like ChatGPT have effect? Oh, yes, of course it will. But not as much as people think. It's probably will have some effect on my industry, management consulting, research, basic research. I can do a lot with ChatGPT, but I could have done that on Google anyway. ChatGPT adds another level, but I don't think it's quite as much as people think. And there has been lots of cases. There's something actually on the news today about someone using ChatGPT to try to plan holidays, and they tried to suggest someone could fly from Cincinnati to somewhere in the Caribbean, except there were no flights that you could fly from A to B, because. So you can't depend on ChatGPT. You've got to be really careful with it. I think in terms of the job thing, I think it's actually different. I think you're going to see a lot more impact on jobs from automation than anything else, because so much a kind of AI machine learning can be applied to automating tasks. And you're seeing a lot of that in the application of HR. You see a lot of that in the application of self-servicing on financial services, on airlines and travel. So look, at the end of the day, there is absolutely no question that aspects of AI are going to have an effect on fairly mundane, process-intensive tasks. The reality is, though, I don't think it's going to be quite as radical and scary as people are making out. Time will tell. Personal view, might be wrong, but I doubt it.
Well, that's an encouraging point of view. So my last question for you would be, and I hope with this we are going to give our listeners some practical tips. So what can leaders do to prepare for this fifth phase?
I think leaders need to do two or three things. I think they all need to become a little bit more, learned about data and AI and analytics. I don't think they need to become experts. They don't need to learn how to write algorithms. They need to understand a little bit more around the process you go through to actually link data and write algorithms and what you can and what you can't do. They need to be a little bit more intelligent as consumers. Point one. I think point two, they've got to start thinking around data and analytics, not as tech and tools, but as part of the transformation, the next concept in business transformation, and start to actually think differently around how you apply that in terms of thinking strategically and in terms of transformational thinking. Because still most of strategic thinking, transformational thinking is based around, you know, selling products to markets. It's around efficiency. It's around, you know, putting projects in place to, you know, drive headcount out, all the rest of it. I think they're going to start reimagining and rethinking a little bit more around transformation strategy are going to be different in the fifth phase than they are currently, because we're moving away from looking at transformation strategy largely as an efficiency, as selling products, to a mindset that says, what do I not know? And do I know what I don't know? And do I have any understanding that there are ways of knowing some of those things through data analytics I'm not currently aware of? I think that will be an absolute step change in executive leadership thinking that is going to come. I think we're at the very beginning of that. I think it will fundamentally change how boards think about organizations in the next 5 to 10 years. And I think it'll be interesting to see how it evolves. My personal view is some organizations are going to embrace it and they are going to achieve things that is not currently achievable, and others will not.
Definitely. Well, thank you very much, Mark, for your time today. It was a very interesting conversation for me. So, yeah, thank you for sharing your insights.
You're welcome, Tara. It's been great. And thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lead Publishing on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and at Lead Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. We are now also on TikTok, so make sure you follow us at Lead Publishing. See you next time on Lead Radio Podcast.